Come Easy Go podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett. This is episode number 49. I'd like to give a big shout out to Rick Wallington. He had birthday last week, and I'd like to wish him a happy birthday. And my guest today is this guy used to stand at half court on a basketball court, face the opposite goal, take a couple warm-up shots over his head, and then he'd start making shots about as often as some people shoot foul shots. And welcome, Bobby Boland. Glad to have you back, man.
Thank you, Wayne. Glad to be back.
And I don't know how long you practiced that shot, but I'm a witness. You're pretty accurate with it. But you had a quote one time that said, "You don't have as much fun when you lose. The bus ride home might be 3 hours, but when you win, it seems like 5 minutes." And you had a lot of 5-minute bus rides, didn't you?
Yeah, those were enjoyable and fun, and we had a lot of long bus rides at Mount State. Our closest game away was probably 5 hours.
Wow.
So we always went the night before and stayed in the hotel, and then left after the game, could get home at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning. There were times we would get home, I would just shower at work and stay there. And much better after a win.
Well, I know, let's go back to Woodrow just a second. I'm lobbying here. We have, I know we talked about in our last interview that you guys had a run there, state finals, won second place 1 year, won state championship a couple years. I coached Tamar Slay. I coached Tink Brown. I coached Chris Daniels, all in football. And I introduced Rich Colasurto to his wife, Pat Laws. And so, you think there's any way I might be in the Woodrow Wilson Basketball Hall of Fame?
You have to be. You have to be.
But, Pat and I graduated together, and she was over at Sophie Elementary training one time when I was over there working, and Rich was an eighth grade teacher, and I introduced them both, and here we go.
Had a thing the other day where Anthony Scruggs was on that 92 and 93 team that I was part of. And then Tink was on the 90 team. So I was part of three of those state championships and the 91 runner-up. And Anthony Scruggs and his son have the most points in the history of the Armory. I mean, Anthony scored 1,400 for Woodrow, 1,900 for me. And his son has 1,500 to West Virginia Tech. So there's not even a close second. And talking the other day, and I said, well, it'd probably be Rich and Ryan Colasurto second. Ryan had 1,500, Rich had 12.
Well, you were an assistant at Woodrow, and the Beckley College became College of West Virginia, and they hadn't had a basketball program since 1977, I think, and this was around 93. How did that connection, how did you get hired as the coach? You hadn't been a head coach in high school, and you hadn't been a head coach in college. How did you get that connection?
You know, Mel Hancock was up there, and he believed in me, and I don't know that anybody else wanted to start a program from scratch.
Yeah.
And I can remember being over at Park Junior High and telling you and Ron Kidd, we were eating lunch, that I was going to do that. But, I heard they were thinking about starting one, and I put a proposal together and went over there and told them we could win a national championship within 10 years. And they looked at me like I was crazy. And I think Mel really believed I could do it. Well, they opened the job up and had a bunch of applications, and they interviewed 5 people. And I kind of sold them on, I wasn't worried about if I was a head coach, assistant coach. We were in the top 25 in the country. And, I felt like that I had a lot to do with it. Coach Barksdale, I learned a lot under him, just the work ethic and all that stuff. And I felt very comfortable that I could do it. And it hadn't been that long ago since I played at that level. Uh-huh. And then I was in for a little rude awakening because it was much more difficult than what I thought. But I think Mel had a lot to do with it. And then I thought that the committee thought they really needed somebody from Beckley to to go out and get the thing started from the ground level. And sold them on that, and they gave me the chance to do it.
So what's the first thing you had to do? I mean, you were hired. What did you do first?
Sat down there. They gave me a year head start. So I sat down there the first, that summer I started recruiting before. And I was recruiting people there, but we didn't have games. I said, we're going to practice a year. And I brought some good players in that had been out of school a few years. Now, some of them made it and some of them didn't.
Who was the first person you recruited?
We signed Mike Ely from Liberty High School. He had a really, really good high school career. We signed him and a kid, Noel Brown from Woodrow. And Noel ended up going in the service. But Mike Ely came and played for us. And then Brian Kidd had just got out of the service. And he was 22 years old. And then he turned into a real player. And we signed him, and then we had Mike Wilson and Glenn Staples and Stuff Lynch decided to transfer back. So we had two Division I transfers the first year, but signed them, and then we practiced that year. Just practiced at the Y. We would get the Y floor, and we practiced there. But then the first week, I said, well, I'm going to make a schedule. And I figured that would take a while. It was done in 2 days. Everybody called and said, well, we're going to start a team in 94. Yeah, how many, what date you want to play us? Everybody wanted to play us. And we had the hardest schedule in the country. I really thought we would come out and win the national championship the first year. We had two Division I transfers and all that. And then I realized everybody had Division I transfers. But we did go 17-16. Wow. And we played Georgetown, Kentucky, Rio Grande, University of Charleston, West Virginia State. I remember calling Greg White and I said, do you want to play twice next year? And he said, Bobby, you sure you know what you're doing? He said, don't you want to schedule, you know, real small? I said, nope, I want to schedule you. Do you want to play? And he said, well, yeah. And so we went up there the day before Christmas break. I ended up getting a center out of Georgia that was really good. And they beat us 75-63 on December 15th. But I let some of my players take their luggage with them to get on the plane after the game to go back home, which was a mistake. Well, Charleston came to Beckley in early February, and we beat him 99-92. Wow. And, so that was a big step. And Brian Neighbors, you know, was a captain on that team for Charleston. And they had a good team. But, yeah, that was kind of the start of it.
Now, you had to find places for these guys to live. You didn't have a dormitory or nothing for those guys if they came to had to stay in town. And I remember I was in a rental business. You had a couple apartments for me, I think. And you know what? I think Brian Kidd, and I think Steph Lynch, and there was another guy stayed there. Great tenants, man. Oh. Never had any problem. They played basketball and went to school.
Oh, yeah. I remember bringing parents and their kids. Now, I'm going to find them a place to live. And then they'd go to these other schools and they'd show them the dorm. And then I would get beat out. But then we end up getting a house on campus, well, four houses on campus after we got pretty good. And that changed the complexion. That changed the game. We were able to go out and get a different level player. But, it was 24 hours a day, 365 days a week. You're either on the phone, couldn't go on vacation, but, you know, to build it to the level that we did, that's just what it was going to take.
Now you had who was your assistant coach starting
back then? It was Stevie Kidd. I had a part-time assistant. So Stevie taught school and came over and then said it was just too much, try to recruit and do that. And then after a couple years, they let me hire Tink Brown as a 20-hour-a-week hourly person. So he couldn't make a living doing that. And then I talked him into getting the second one. I had Tommy Fox. And, you know, they did it for 3 years. Now, we did make it to number one in the country in 98 with that. But these other guys had three full-timers. And Tink and Tommy had other jobs on campus. And then finally, you know, Tink and Tommy said, hey, I got to go make a living. It's family time and all that. So they left. And I went to the president. I said, we can't win national championship unless I get two full-time guys. I said, everybody else has them. And then that's when we hired Artis Maddox and Dave Barksdale.
Well, when was the first year that you made it to the semifinals?
Well, we made the championship, actually. Every time we made the semifinals, we won and made the championship except for once. But we made the championship in 2003, and we got beaten overtime. And it was to Concordia. And then we played Concordia again in the championship in 04. First time in the history of the NAIA that the same two teams made it back to the championship. And we were able to beat them in 04.
How did you get these guys from overseas? And I mean, what kind of recruiting connections did you have? How did you establish that? I mean,
we just stayed on the phone all the time. Just one phone call would lead to another. And like a lot of these coaches say, boy, with this transfer portal, you would kill it now. I said, nah, the transfer portal would kill me. And they said, why? I said, everybody can press one button now and they got the kids' phone numbers. I said, I could track a kid down through a girlfriend, an uncle, an aunt. I would stay on the phone seven hours. If I saw it go through the crawl, a kid left Syracuse. And I could find a tie to Beckley, and by midnight, I'd have that kid on the phone. And so just outworking people and just those kinds of things. And then when I would go to the NCAA Final Four, everybody else would go out there and have a good time. Well, I would make all my friends the junior college coaches. I mean, if I had to buy them a burger or buy them this or that, and then everybody else would be trying to hang out with all the big-time Division I coaches. Well, I went and hung out with the junior college coaches. And, boy, then when they had a player that was going to be our level, they said, man, remember that bowling guy? And my phone would start ringing. Hey, I got one that should be Division I, but for this or that reason, he's not going to be there. And I say, let's get a look at him. And, you know, so just that way.
Now you had some other duties there. You was the athletic director too.
Yeah, I was real smart to hire a good assistant athletic director. I did have those duties, and I had an assistant athletic director that would kind of oversee the other teams, and I would do the fundraising part of it and raise some money, and then I would coach the team. So did have some other duties, but had some help where I could pass that off.
Now, you had to start a booster club. I think Jim Justice was an officer or something.
President.
Was he the president?
Yes, he was.
Well, that's a good move.
Oh, a great move. And, you know, all that goes back to our days at the Y and my dad and Jim's friendship. And, you know, a lot of it tied back to that.
But now, without going too deep, in NAIA, can you give scholarships? I mean, how does that work?
Oh, yeah. We had 11 full rides.
11 full rides.
Yeah, and then if they had GPA so high, they didn't count against your 11. You could actually end up with about 13, you know, if your school was willing to do it. And our school was willing to do it to be competitive with the top teams in the country.
Now, when you won the national championship in 2004, what was that like? I mean, when you're
tired. I mean, you have to win 5 games in 6 days in Kansas City. And we had the late night schedule. So we either had an 8 p.m., a 9:15, or a 10:30 game. So you would get back home from your game at midnight. The managers and all the people that volunteers were, they would go out and get the kids' food, bring it back to the hotel. The kids would get in the bed. Well, the coaching staff would stay up all night watching tape on your next opponent.
Wow.
So you may get to, I mean, we may have got to bed at 6 in the morning and slept till 8. And then we're back up. And then when that happened 5 days in a row, I remember the game was on CBS, the championship, or the semifinals were. And my brother called me and I answered the phone. I thought he was going to say, great win. He said, dude, you look like a raccoon on TV. I had these big bags under my eyes and they were black.
That's going to a lot. I mean, I don't see how the players even had any legs, man.
We're just in shape and ice baths. You know, young kids. But, yeah, the coaching staff didn't go to bed. You just worked the whole time and went after it.
You think Zach Moss was maybe your most dominant player you ever had?
Without a doubt. You know, I know a lot of coaches don't like to tell that. Our players will tell you that. And he wasn't a great shooter, but he could just put his head over the rim, and he was tough. And we surrounded him with 3 great shooters, Corte Hall, Zane Gilliard, and Mirsad Terzic. And Corte and Mirsad, or TZ, they're still in Beckley. And we put the 3 best shooters in the country around him. And so teams couldn't double-team him. And, yeah, he was a dominant player.
Where's he at now?
He's in Florida.
Is he still around basketball? Or?
Yeah, he coaches. He coaches a girls' team down there. And he has a daughter at Woodrow that he comes back to Beckley. She's 6'4".
Wow.
Now plays volleyball, not a basketball player.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, so I'm still in contact with Zach once every 2 weeks. And Corte Hall doing great around here in Beckley. Zane Gilliard doing great. TZ's a Jan Care. He's the computer specialist at Jan Care. And I mean, still in contact with those guys on a weekly basis.
Good. That's good. Now for your the success you had at the college or university, you you were named Coach of the Year. Well, you were the West Virginia Coach of the Year, the Mickey Fafari Award. I think that was in 2004, and then you actually won a Coach of the Year in 2010, I think. And was there other? There were some other Coach of the Year awards.
Regionals, but those were the two national. Yeah, 04 and 10, and then the West Virginia one.
And so you definitely had your name on the board. The university was the one that preseason rankings were always got a lot of consideration. But then around 2012, what happened?
Ooh, boy, it fell through. And it had nothing to do with basketball. It was something with our nursing accreditation, and the Higher Learning Commission came in and didn't like what was said to them. And next thing you knew, the school was in trouble. And you know, financially, the school had done so well, and boy, that was rough. And we had just come off the Final Four and probably brought five players in that were better than the five we had. I mean, we were set up to have the best team ever, and it fell through. And
did you have any warning at all?
Yeah, but I wasn't smart enough to realize it.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a job, probably the dream job, as an assistant coach at a school that everybody around here knows. And a buddy offered it to me, probably doubled my pay. It was a great job. And I turned it down. And 3 months later, Mountain State shut down. Wow. And I was happy. I was happy in Beckley. I was happy here. We knew how to win here. You know, I mean, I'm just happy. My kids were happy here. My wife was happy here. And I thought, boy, I'd like to go take that job. And then I thought, nah. And then the next thing you knew, we're moving to Tennessee.
Well, you, I know a couple of years before that happened, you had called me about a wrestling job. Y'all were talking about starting a wrestling
program. We were, and you were the first call.
I would have been tickled to death if my situation would have been different. I mean, starting from the ground up on a wrestling program and coaching college, and I'm glad I did under the circumstances. But during the 19 years that you were at Mountain State University, there was one 10-year span. You had like an 88% winning, which is ungodly, and won 489 ball games. And I mean, that's quite a record. And so the bottom's kind of dropped out. I know you still want to be around basketball. Where'd you go looking, or who came looking?
Well, I mean, I'll just tell it like it is. I was still getting paid under a contract. So I didn't go anywhere that first year and kind of enjoyed it. And then that second year, really, I had one phone call. I didn't even apply. And a guy said, there's two assistants open at East Tennessee State, and there was a person associated with that school that also had ties to Mountain State. They said, we want you to go up there and talk to the head coach, Murray Bartow. Drove up there and sat down. They hadn't even posted the job yet, which I don't know if that was legal or illegal. I don't know. But anyway, I ended up there, bought a house there, tried to make it work with the kids. And, man, I got Beckley kids. They wanted to come back home so bad. And yeah. What a great place to live. I loved it. And
well, I know Bartow. I mean, he was a pretty reputable coach himself. And, you know, he described you. He said you can make players better. You're a strong communicator, recruiter. I mean, he thought the world of you.
Lord, we're still in contact. What a great guy. I enjoyed working for him. You know, his dad was Gene Bartow, who took over for John Wooden.
Yeah.
And Murray, just a great guy, great coach. You know, they went 10-22 the year before I got there. Now, he had teams that went to the NCAA tournament. They had a bad year. And then our first year, we were 17-14. And our second year, I think we were 18-16. And he was the only coach in America that got fired and had a winning record in college that year. But he'd been there 12 years. You know, I think it was a new administration, a new athletic director that wanted his guy. And when I first went there, I just didn't see that. I knew he had a four-year rolling contract. I'm like, there's no way they're going to fire him. They don't have that much money. Well, they did. And you know, so I was kind of caught there and told that I was going to be the top assistant on the new staff. So I hung around there. Well, then the new coach didn't remember him telling that, you know, how things happen. And, you know, so then I had a cake job there for a year. Where they had to pay me again. I got that. So I stayed there a year, and then I realized, you know, my kids wanted to be back in Beckley. It was just time to come home. And, you know, I thought about it, and everybody said, boy, you had the highest winning percentage of any coach in America, and you're out of it. And I said, man, I got to coach in my hometown for 28 years or 25 years, and then I got to coach D1. I'm not going to be greedy. And I had a good run, and I'm happy with it. And was happy not to work 20 hours a day, too, when it was over.
I understand that. So you came back to Beckley, and you, I guess you substitute taught for a year or so, or how did you got back into teaching?
Yeah, I got on the sub list, but I never went. Oh. I just wanted a key to a couple of the gyms local so I could take my sons in there. No, for 2 years, maybe, I was Mr. Dad. And I had a thing with Employers Innovative Network that I kind of, you know, did as a side job and worked, and it went well. So I had some things going on that I worked, but it wasn't a 9-to-5. So I got to drive the kids to school, and man, I hated doing dishes and sitting at home. I'd go the Y, I'd drive the kids to school and go the Y, and I'd be home at 9:30, and my day was over. And a lot of people like that, I didn't. I mean, I'm not a big golfer, not a big fisherman. I wanted to work. So as soon as my youngest boy or my oldest boy got a driver's license and he could drive he and his brother to school, I went back to work.
Well, tell us a little bit about your family. I know Lisa, your wife, is a school teacher.
Yeah.
Where she teach now? She's
at Beckley Elementary.
And what about your kids?
Starting talking with Lisa, boy, being a coach's wife, you know how that goes. Man, she was awesome. Before kids, she would ride on those vans with those stinky ball players with me all the way to Florida. We had to take vans, and I mean, she was just awesome. She'd keep the scorebook. And then Katie is finishing her master's degree in occupational therapy at Shawnee State, but she lives in Huntington and drives. She was a Marshall graduate. And she substitute teaches during COVID, you know, when they have class online, and she's in Beckley. And Jason, he's selling cars and working on a pilot's license. And Andrew's a senior in high school, but he has a full-time job with video productions as a producer. So they all stay active. They all stay busy. And
that's great.
Yeah, I like to keep them at home as long as possible.
Well, how did you get hooked up with the broadcasting Marshall games, Marshall University?
Well, that last year at East Tennessee State, they came to him and they were just going to this ESPN3 platform. And they needed a former coach to be an analyst. And I was already on their payroll, and the AD sat down. And, you know, it was the new coaching staff that came in. He said, you know, I'd like for you to try this, and we'd like to test you out on it. We think you could do it. You know, how do you feel about the new coaching staff? I said, oh, I can be indifferent. That won't bother me a bit. And so they gave me a shot at it. And evidently they liked what I did. And so that kept going. Well, then they hired me and I'd really never watched any girls basketball. They hired me for the women's through ESPN. So I ended up with about 40 games on ESPN+.
Wow.
Well, but then my contract was over there. And with what they were going to pay for ESPN+, I wasn't going to stay in Tennessee. So I came home with them Marshall and their ESPN crew that's in the West Virginia area. Heard I was back in West Virginia, and they called and said, man, we'd like to have you join the crew for the Marshall games. And I said, I'd love to do it. So did that, and then I'll make it quick. Video Productions called, and I thought it was a little different than it was. I said, hey, I really don't want to do high school. And I kind of enjoy doing the college game. Well, one Friday night, I was sitting home bored, and I put on my big screen one of the Video Production games, and I couldn't believe the quality. And that was like January 30th. And I called the guy that Saturday morning. I said, hey, I'm in if you want me for any games. He sent me a schedule and said, pick them. Pick which games you want. So I ended up doing games for him and doing the state tournament. So that kind of led into that. So now it's up to 80 games a year and full time.
Well, now you still do Marshall?
Oh, yeah.
And do you work with Mark Martin most of the time?
Yeah, I'm the analyst for all their home games, unless they go up to ESPN2, then I get booted off because I'm considered local. And I do half of them with Mark and half of them with a young guy named Jake Griffith. And I got one January 8th. So it's only the home games. I don't have to travel. But 16 of their 18 games I have this year. Two of them went up to ESPN2. So I have 16 of the 18 of theirs.
Well, now, with video productions, besides being a basketball analyst, I mean, do you have another title? Or how are you tied in? Do you sell ads or what else?
Yeah, I do some of that. And talk to the owner every day, and because my son's involved. But no, I don't have an official title except for the analyst. But
You're teaching school, too.
Yeah. I'm up at 5 a.m. every morning. Teaching math at Trap Hill and enjoy the kids. I'm just not one. I mean, if I had hobbies, maybe I'd like to. I don't have any hobbies, so I like teaching math and like kids, and end up going down there and have really enjoyed myself down there.
Well, do you think you ever be back in basketball coaching again?
If the right job, it'd have to be the right one. Andrew's a senior right now, and I knew I wasn't going back into coaching until he was out of high school.
Uh-huh.
And so he finishes this year. If the right opportunity, I think I'd probably like to be, if I did it, it'd be a Division I assistant. Have to be close. In the eastern part of the United States, and have to be with a friend. I'm not going to go work for some young guy that's going to tell me what to do every second of the day or micromanage. But I still have a lot of buddies in the game. And if one of them called, and they've called in the last few years, and if one of them called, I'd consider it.
Well, you've grew up around the game, and there's no doubt that you know the game, and that's how come you got some signs out there on Route 64 and 77, and that home of Bob Bolin. And what's on your bucket list? Let's say, if you don't coach basketball, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, I don't know, man.
How old are you?
58.
58.
And I don't tell people that. I try to hide that. If you tell people that, college coaching, they may say, I don't want you. I think I'd like to have a second house on a lake. And, a bucket list. Man, I just like enjoying my kids. I spend a lot of time with my parents now. And, bucket list career. I don't think I have one right now. I think that's a good way to be. I don't think I sit there and go to bed at night going, boy, I want to win another national championship. But now if the right situation, that could change.
Yeah.
But, I don't sweat it. Don't worry about it. If I hit you with that bucket list, you got a lot of things you like to do and organize and do things. I don't know, but I'd have to put a lot of thought into
yeah.
that one.
Well, you've been to the top as far as that's concerned, and how do you, if you do have any free time now, how do you spend it at all?
Working with that video and, trying to get better at what I'm doing with this broadcasting.
Yeah.
I enjoy that. Just hanging out with the wife and kids. We do like to ride side by sides. We'll go on 12 or 14 hour rides. We go with a buddy, Dave Williams, a state policeman, and he knows every trail. We've hopped on at Harper Road and end up in Boone County. and we really enjoy going out in the woods and riding those side-by-sides. And then in the summer, I spend a lot of time on summer. So I guess I do have hobbies. I just didn't realize I did.
You still got jet skis?
Got rid of them. The same ones, Wayne, I have for 25 years. Got rid of them last year. But we still have a pontoon boat on Summersville Lake and spend a lot of time up there.
That's great.
To go up there. And, so that's a hobby. I guess I think a hobby's got to be golf, something competitive. I have some non-competitive hobbies.
Well, how would you like, what changes do you think needs to be done in college basketball or college sports, or is there anything that you think needs to be changed now?
Yeah, we don't have enough time on this podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, college football, playoff system. Nobody's watching these bowls. time to go to about 12 of them, 16 of them, and play it off. And I know there's positives and negatives. High school basketball needs that restricted area circle under the basket where kids can slide under people and take charges and everybody collides and the referees have too hard of a time deciding if it's a charge or a block. I mean, I can go on and on about things that I think should change. I mean, I think the basketball is in a good place, but with the NCAA and all this name, image, and likeness, everything's going to change. I didn't like that. And a lot of people do, but I didn't. I mean, I like the players being able to make some money off of their. I like that, but I don't like what it's doing to loyalty where they can just transfer anytime. I hate that. But, and say the coaches could do, well, maybe the coaches shouldn't be able to do it either.
Yeah.
Maybe if they transfer, there should be a penalty too. But, yeah, I don't like that. You know, a kid played 1 year and, oh, man, I'm the eighth man. And, you know, then they can go transfer somewhere else. And
yeah, I can't keep up with them.
No, and it makes you not watch it as much.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, you know, two of Marshall's players were starting for Eastern Kentucky this year or playing for Eastern Kentucky this year. And, you know, I don't enjoy that. And, I know I could take a lot of heat for that. Well, you let the coaches do it. And that's right. Maybe coaches shouldn't be able to do it either.
I agree.
Maybe they should have to pay a big penalty if they decide to switch in the middle of the year or something. And but I don't like that direction it's going at all.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, I guess. But, Coach, I appreciate you coming by, man. It's 30 minutes. We talk, and time just flies. But I got one other question. Can I get you back again?
Oh, I'd love to come back. That's the quickest 30 minutes. And, you know, our friendship goes back so far. It's fun sitting here talking to you about sports. And
I'd like to get you back maybe about a week or so before the state basketball tournament.
That would be good.
Let you put you on the line and let you predict a few winners maybe or something. Hey, but
we'll do that.
That's a date then. And anybody else out there who wants to be on the show, just give us a call. Get on Facebook and connect with me or email me at awbennett50@gmail.com. And until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And we sure enjoyed talking to Coach Bowling, Bobby, and I tell your dad, anytime he wants to come on, we want to have him.
I'd love to. He will love it.
Thank you, man. God bless you.